Ait was playing her part more willingly than Hilo, however, because she was good at it. Far better than him, a fact she lorded over him with every word and gesture. She'd been weatherman before she'd become pillar, and knew how to come across as a seasoned and articulate businesswoman. She was using that advantage now to taunt and provoke him, to make him seem like nothing but a young hoodlum. The contrast between them made these jadeless stooges forget that Ait Mada was the most powerful pillar on Kaikon on account of having killed her father's horn, his first and second fists, his pillarmen, and his youngest son. At times, the thought made Hilo chuckle. The second day ended with so little change from the previous that even the relentless Onde seemed discouraged. Hilo was impatient to get to a phone, to find out if one of his fists, Gunjeru, who'd been ambushed and badly injured just before dawn, had survived the surgery room. He and Shay said little to each other, parting ways outside of Wisdom Hall. Shay stepped into a car waiting to take her back to the weatherman's office on Ship Street. Hilo found it amusing that for someone who had put on such a show of eschewing clan trappings back when she'd first returned to John Loon, his weatherman seemed to harbor no qualms about wielding them now, which merely proved to Hilo that his sister had been fooling herself the whole time and ought to have known better, ought to have come around before she'd been forced. Hilo looked for his driver and the Duchess in front of the reflecting pool, but instead saw Make Tar waiting in one of the clan's nondescript cars. When he got into the passenger seat, Tar turned down the radio and offered him a cigarette. Hilo noticed that the pillarman's sleeve was speckled with dried blood. His eyes were ringed from lack of sleep, but gleamed with a triumph that made the texture of his aura scratchy with repressed excitement.
"How'd it go?" Tar asked. "Same as before?"
"Worse. A shame the penitents are still there."
"You could bring me in," offered Tar. "I'm not going to heaven anyway."
"How's Goon?" The unhappy shift in Tar's aura answered him immediately.
"Fuck," Hilo said quietly.
Goon had been a classmate of his, a skilled fighter, but also a funny man who put people in a good mood and could always tell a story. Hilo ought to have seen him before he died, ought to have gone in person to break the news to his parents and sister. Instead, he'd been mincing words and pandering pointlessly in Wisdom Hall. A wave of rage boiled up Hilo's neck and into his face.
"Fuck. Fuck the gods. Fuck Ait and fuck Gaunt with a sharp stick. Fuck them."
He slammed his head against the headrest and punched the ceiling of the car, denting it. Tar dangled his cigarette out the open window and waited until his pillar had calmed down.
"Let the gods recognize him, poor bastard," he said at last.
"Let the gods recognize him," Hilo agreed in a deadened voice.
"It's not all bad news, though," Tar said, and waited with some obvious smugness for Hilo to ask him what redeeming thing it was he'd made a point to come in person to share.
Tar was like a kid sometimes, eager to please, prone to both tantrums and overexcitement, possessing a curious combination of boldness and insecurity. Ever since he'd gotten out of the hospital, he'd seemed desperate for a chance to prove himself and displace the embarrassment of his injury. Redesigning the pillarman's role for Tar was a stroke of personnel genius that Hilo was quite proud of. Still, as he was in an awful mood over losing Goon, Hilo did not at once indulge the man's eagerness. Instead, he asked, "Has Ken been to Goon's family?"
"I don't know," Tar said. "I haven't talked to him."
"Who's managing Goon's fingers?"
"Fway or Lote, as far as I know."
Tar sounded a little surly now. Goon had been his classmate too, but Tar seemed only mildly bothered by his death. He cared for only a few people in the world, though these people could ask anything of him. Hilo gave in.
"What's giving you such a hard-on that you have to tell me?"
After Tar had explained everything, Hilo stared out the window,
his burning gaze resting unfocused on some middle distance as the fingers of his right hand drummed lightly and rapidly on one knee. "Drive," he told Tar. "Let me think about this." After a while longer, he declared, "Tomorrow's gonna be different. A lot different." "You did good, Tar," and his pillarman smiled in satisfaction at the praise, touching the new talon knife on his belt. Chapter 46. Honest Talk. On the morning of the third day of mediation, Hilo arrived early at Wisdom Hall with Shay to meet with Chancellor Sohn Tomorrow, who had been requesting a meeting with the pillar for some time, with increasing pique.
"Call Jen, come in. How are the gods favoring you?" Sohn asked, ushering them into his office.
"With their usual sadistic sense of humor," Hilo said. "You?" The politician appeared to stifle an involuntary reaction to Hilo's casual blasphemy by lowering his ruddy face beneath a stiff and shallow salute.
"Ah, well enough, thank you."
Hilo was under the distinct impression that Chancellor Sohn Tomorrow did not like him. A year ago, he'd refused Sohn's request that he break up the workers' strike on the docks by force, and at Lan's funeral, the man had shown only the minimum of respect to the new pillar. The fact that Hilo had now ignored him for several weeks while he concentrated on the war could only have exacerbated the man's dislike. Indeed, the way Sohn was looking at him now, with an obviously forced smile that did not hide the coldness of his scrutinizing gaze, confirmed what Hilo suspected. The Chancellor saw himself as a man of political refinement and distinction, someone existing above the unfortunate but occasionally necessary savagery of certain parts of the clan. Sohn looked at Hilo and saw youth and muscle, someone who ought to be taking orders, not giving them, and certainly not attending Wisdom Hall as pillar. It was difficult for Hilo to behave in a rational and civil manner toward people with whom he did not share any personal warmth. Their status or importance in the eyes of others had little bearing on him. He knew this was a weakness on his part. Indeed, placing personal feelings over more politic considerations had led him into trouble before and earned him his grandfather's ire. When Hilo and his siblings were children, Carl Sen had beaten Lan infrequently and Shay not at all, but his middle grandchild had been whipped for causing trouble with instructors at the academy, for breaking the arm of the son of one of his grandfather's own business partners, for being seen around the city everywhere with the Make Boys. Doing his best to quell both an instinctive resentment towards Sohn and a sense of general discomfort with the pompous formality of the oak-paneled office, Hilo let himself be gestured into the seat across from the Chancellor's wide desk. Shay positioned her chair slightly behind and to the left of his. He was glad she was present, because she appeared more at ease than he felt. The Chancellor sat and motioned to his aide to bring refreshments, then turned to Hilo with that same painted-on smile. Hilo said,
"Well, I'm here. What do you want to talk about?"
Sohn's smile wavered visibly.
"Call Jen," he said, recovering it with admirable speed. "I appreciate that you're a very busy man. Leading the clan as pillar in this time of difficulty is no doubt all-consuming. I dare say as much work as running a country."
The rebuke was delivered with a casual thrust, but it was clear nevertheless. Sohn was the functional head of the government, and not pleased with having been kept waiting by a 28-year-old street fighter who'd come into the clan's leadership unintended. Hilo replied with a casual jab of his own.
"I hope none of your political opponents are trying to take off your head with a moonblade."
He nodded in thanks at the aide who put a cold glass of anise-scented tea in front of him. Trying hard to bear in mind what Shay had told him about the importance of the Royal Council and the clan's need for political support and legitimacy, Hilo changed his tone and said more seriously,
"I'll admit I have a lot to learn about being the pillar. My brother, let the gods recognize him,
didn't have a chance to prepare me for it. Our enemies saw to that, and I haven't been off my feet since. I apologize if I've been disrespectful by not meeting with you sooner.
Hilo's sincerity seemed to appease Sohn somewhat.
Well, the most important thing is that you've been sitting down with Ait Mada in the Council's Mediation Committee. As Chancellor, I couldn't be part of the committee myself, but it's making progress, I hope. A negotiated peace is, after all, what we're all hoping for. With great difficulty, Hilo kept the sneer off his face by lifting his glass and draining half of it. Chancellor Sohn's eyes flicked down to the sight of Hilo's hand, the calloused knuckles covered with recent scabs, and was less successful than his guest in not betraying his contempt. His mouth twitched, wobbling his jowls for a second, before he said, "The sooner the clans can resolve their differences and return our city to normal, the better. For the sake of the people and the country." "The mountain murdered my brother."
Sohn Tomorrow cleared his throat uncomfortably.
"A terrible tragedy that will never be forgotten. However, I would venture to say, based on my experiences with Kaul Lanjen, that he would have placed the ultimate good of the clan and the nation foremost in his mind, ahead of any personal desire for vengeance. I'm not Lan."
And suddenly, having said these words aloud, Hilo relaxed. A smile returned. The Lantern Man in the Royal Council will have to accept that. The Chancellor frowned for the first time.
"The Lantern Men of No Peak, while they are unwavering in their loyalty and allegiance to the clan, are naturally concerned for the safety of their communities and the hardship that's being imposed on them."
"You mean the increase in tribute payments," Hilo inferred.
"It's true we've had to raise tribute in order to fight the war. The weatherman can speak to that."
It was not the most graceful way to give Shay permission to speak, but Hilo was losing patience for the niceties. Besides, he'd been perceiving for some time Shay's aura bristling with anxiety that he would fuck this meeting up, and he might as well let her say her piece. Shay leaned forward at once and said, "As you've said, Chancellor, war between the clans has disrupted business. No Peak is obligated to provide financial aid to our lantern men whose property has been damaged or whose livelihoods have been affected. When Green Bones are killed, we pay for their funerals and provide for their families. When they're injured, there are medical bills to account for. Unfortunately, the mountain has a substantial financial advantage over us as a result of manufacturing SN1 overseas and appropriating jade outside of the purview of the Kaycon Jade Alliance. The official audit results haven't been released, but I can provide you with all the proof you require." She inclined her head and concluded firmly, "No Peak needs the full support of its lantern men right now, and we've raised tribute only so far as necessary on those who can bear it. If you wish to see the details of how we've calculated the new rates, I'd be more than willing to share them."
Hilo was impressed. His sister sounded like a real weatherman. Chancellor Sohn leaned back in his chair, crossing his well-padded arms. "I don't doubt your math, but the reality is that increased tribute is a hardship for even the most loyal clan members. It will be seen as particularly poor thanks for those,"
and here Hilo had no doubt Sohn was referring to himself,
"who've been tirelessly driving on Kaul Jen's mandate, the passage of bills legislating inspection and reform of the KJA. "Fuck the KJA, Hilo said. "What happens there doesn't matter."
Sohn Tomorrow's face went momentarily blank.
"Kaul Jen," he said at last, completely nonplussed, "your brother, let the gods recognize him, believed strongly in establishing ownership safeguards around the national jade supply. My brother was trying to prevent war. Now we're at war. Whoever wins is going to control the city, and the council, and the jade supply. If the mountain takes over No Peak to become the single most powerful clan on Kaycon,
Do you really think Ike's going to give a sick dog's wet shit about your legislation?
Pushing back from the table, Hilo stood up and stretched, stiff from a host of recently acquired minor injuries. Surprised, but following his lead, Shay stood up with him, but Chancellor Soane remained seated, apparently at a loss for how to respond. Finally, he rose to his feet and said, with no remaining trace of his practiced geniality,
"So you mean to disregard the concerns of the Lantern Man, then, and to dismiss the efforts of the Council?"
"Not at all," Hilo said. It was true that he was not Lon. He did not have Lon's gravity, nor his diplomatic acumen. He couldn't handle this the way Lon would have handled it, but he'd dealt with disgruntled subordinates and unhappy Lantern Men before, on his side of the clan.
"The clan would be worthless without its Lantern Men and without people like you, Chancellor," he said.
"But I'm starting to think that after so many years of peace, some people have forgotten why they pay tribute.
I've always been taught that back during the war, the Lantern Men were patriots who risked their lives to help Greenbones, because Greenbones protected the people when the country was in danger. We're at war again now, and the country will be in danger if no peak falls to the mountain. If one clan controls Jade, isn't that what Lon was afraid of when he came to you?"
Hilo fixed the Chancellor with a penetrating stare. It was not unfriendly, but there was a predatory quality to Hilo's stare that made many people flinch or lower their eyes when subjected to it, and the Chancellor was no exception.
"I can see you don't like me much," said Hilo with cool amiability. "But I'm the pillar, and you're the highest politician in the country with ties to No Peak. We're clan brothers of a sort. We both want to win this and come out alive."
Soane's eyes widened.
"I want what's best for Kaycon, Kaljen, and that's peace between the clans. That's why I moved immediately to form the Mediation Committee."
"The mediation's a fucking farce," said Hilo.
"You'll find out why soon enough."
"So we've got to win this thing, and that means the Lantern Men have got to be wartime Lantern Men. They've got to stick their necks out for the clan. Prove that allegiance that they're always going on about when they come asking us for this or that. They've got to pay the higher tributes, and you have to make sure they do it."
Chancellor Soane burst into a coughing, nervous laugh.
"There are thousands of Lantern Men in the clan. You're deliberately making decisions that risk a mass defection from No Peak. You can hardly expect that I ought to be held responsible."
"What's that number again?"
Hilo turned slightly over his shoulder towards Shay.
"How many companies make up some large percent of the clan's business?"
"The 25 largest No Peak affiliated entities account for 65% of the clan's tributary income," said the weatherman.
Hilo turned back to Soane with satisfaction.
"Right. So what the big dogs decide is what matters. All the little dogs will follow. The Soane family is one of the big dogs. It has to go to the others and convince them to fall into line. Make them see that they might have to suffer a little right now, but it's so the clan can win. People are people, whether they're Lantern Men or fists, jaded or not. They'll run when they lose hope, but they'll put up with any hardship if they think they'll come out on top in the end."
Soane tugged at his collar, which he abruptly seemed to be finding too tight for his bulging neck.
"There could well be many Lantern Men who would rather defect to the mountain than commit themselves to No Peak under such unyielding terms."
The pillar appeared to consider this.
"You wouldn't be one of those people, would you, Chancellor?" he asked quietly.
"If the mountain destroys No Peak and takes the city, I'll be dead. My entire family will be dead. You're the one who'll live with what happens afterward."
Hilo could see the wheels turning in the politician's head. Jaded or not, one did not rise to power in John Loon without a great deal of shrewdness and a powerful instinct for survival. And Chancellor Soane was well aware of the fact that he was far too closely and publicly tied to No Peak to to survive politically in a city ruled by the Mountain. Soane had orchestrated the KJA reform bills and the financial audit meant to expose the Mountain's illegal activities. His daughters ran a no-peak tribute business and had married into the clan. One of his sons-in-law was a luckbringer, and the other was a mid-rank fist. His political and business allies would be targeted by Mountain-affiliated rivals. There was no escape for Soane tomorrow, any more than for the calls. Hilo saw all these thoughts writ in the Chancellor's deeply resentful silence, and he felt compelled to walk around the huge desk to the man. Soane seemed slumped into his own bulk, making no effort to move away, and only tensing in a half-hearted way when Hilo laid a hand on his ample shoulder. "My grandfather and my older brother had great respect for you," Hilo said solemnly. "So I have respect for you, even if I can see on your face that you don't respect me as Pillar. Normally, I wouldn't put up with that, but I'm willing to forgive it, because of course I understand. Why would you accept me after years of dealing with Lon? There's one thing I'll say, though. So long as I live, I'll never turn my back on a friend. Ask any one of my fists, anyone who knows me, even my enemies, and they'll tell you if what I say is true. You're already an old friend of the clan, so if you're willing to forget my disrespect in not coming to you earlier, I'll gladly forget your slights to me. If we survive this together, we'll be like brothers in arms. What a laugh that'll be, won't it? Two men as different as us. But the clan needs both of us to stand firm now." Soane drew a breath into his large frame and blew out loudly. When he turned to look at Hilo, he wore the dignified expression of a veteran statesman making an unfortunate but unavoidable decision and girding himself to face the inevitable storm to follow. The Chancellor might not be pleased or willing, but at least Hilo could see the man's reluctant regard, his grudging reassessment of the new Pillar. "I am loyal to the clan, and you've made your position quite clear, Kaljen," Soane said, with a touch of bitterness and admiration. "I believe we have a mutual understanding." And he brought his clasped hands up to touch his forehead, inclining into a salute. "What was that?" Shay hissed as they walked from Soane's office down to the Mediation Committee's meeting room. "That wasn't what we'd planned." "It went fine." Despite having achieved what he wanted with Soane, Hilo was not smiling as he strode down the marbled hallway with grim purpose. He resisted the urge to append some smug remark to his sister about what had happened. You didn't need to speak sweetly and offer patronage at every turn to these people. You had to be honest with them and show that they had more to gain from your friendship than your enmity. Did she think his fists obeyed him because they were rewarded with favors or cowed by threats? No. Mutual survival was the basis of brotherhood and loyalty, even of love.
"What is it? What haven't you told me?"
Shay whispered urgently as they reached the doors of the meeting room. She could perceive his cold fury and aggravation. He didn't answer her, merely pulled open the door and strode in. She'd know soon enough. The meeting with the Chancellor had delayed them. They were the last to arrive. Ait and Rhee were already there, Ait conversing formally but amiably with two of the councilmen that Hilo knew to be Mountain loyalists. Hilo dropped into his chair without apology for the tardiness. From across the room, the other Pillar turned her head toward him, unable to avoid perceiving the ferocity in his aura. Others in the room shifted uneasily, sensing the change as well. The first two sessions had been expectedly tense. This was different. Something had brought Hilo to a true temper. Councilwoman Onde cleared her throat.
"As we're now all present, let's begin where we left off yesterday."
She seemed uncertain of how to proceed and flipped nervously through the copious notes on her yellow legal pad.
"We were discussing the financial terms of a peace agreement between the clans."
Onde glanced at Hilo, but hesitated to call on him. Instead, she turned to the mountain pillar and said,
Aichen, I believe you were about to make a proposal at the close of our session yesterday.
Aitmata wore an expression of complacent curiosity as she regarded Hilo. It was clear that something she had said or done had gotten to him, and she seemed eager to discover whether her foolhardy young rival would finally explode and make a spectacle of himself. Ait laced her fingers. Those loose sleeves of her silk blouse slid down her forearms, revealing snaking coils of jade.
Yes, chairwoman, she said. I was explaining that No Peak's offenses against us over the past year have been so costly that it is only reasonable we discuss reparations. Reparations. It was too perfect.
Hilo leaned his head back and laughed. No one else at the table seemed to think his outburst of mirth and contempt was appropriate. The No Peak council members stared at him, aghast, and he could feel Shay's aura raking him with disapproval.
Call Jen, said Councilwoman Onde, with nervous admonishment. Ait Jen has brought up the very valid and serious issue of financial settlement. Your response suggests you're dismissing the idea as humorous. The committee would appreciate it if you would elaborate on your position calmly.
Hilo leaned forward, a forearm on the table, the other hand pressing against the arm of his chair so he nearly rose from his seat. The room froze as the amusement on Hilo's face transformed into menace. In a soft, flat voice that carried in the frightened silence, he said to the other pillar,
Enough bullshit, Ait. You're a thief. A jade thief.
It was the worst sort of insult between Greenbones, to suggest a person did not deserve the jade she carried, that she'd come about it dishonorably. For a second, Ait's face went entirely still, and her eyes burned with a light that appeared as if she'd fly out of her seat to snap Hilo's spine. Then, with impressive aplomb, she turned a calm face to Councilwoman Onde.
It appears Kaljen has no respect for these proceedings.
Don't talk to them, Hilo barked. You'll talk to me.
For the first time, he saw Ait regard him in a tense assessment that held something other than contempt.
The mountain is behind the discrepancies in the KJA's records. Don't lie to my face, thief. You've been taking jade above quota from the mines all year.
Behind him, Shay sucked in a breath. Her jade aura flared and bathed him in shock and recrimination.
What are you doing?
He could sense her shouting at him in her mind. Their trump card, their biggest charge against the mountain. He'd thrown it down more than 2 days early, without waiting for the audit results, without clearing it with her, or gathering the support of No Peak loyalists on the council. He'd ruined her plan. They'd lost the potential leverage of using the public disclosure of the audit results as a bargaining chip against the mountain. Shay was furious. He could tell she kept herself silently in check now, only because the weatherman speaking out in this public forum without the pillar's cue would only make them look worse. Ait, however, had recovered her poise. He was acting impulsive and desperate, as she'd expected. Nodding at something Ree Tura whispered quickly into her ear, she said,
Councilman, I've offered up genuine territorial and business grievances. Call Jen throws out one preposterous, unfounded suspicion. Whatever the reason for the purported accounting discrepancies in the KJA, I'm sure the audit will reveal them to be due to unintended negligence rather than malice. This accusation is a distraction.
Hilo threw his hands up to gesture at the entire room.
This is a distraction. There's no mediation that can happen here.
He pointed at Councilwoman Onde, who shrank back slightly.
You want peace? All of you want peace?
There's only one kind of peace the mountain will accept. One clan in power. In complete control of both Jade and Shine. Gold and Jade together. Tell me if that's the peace you want.
The people around the table were shifting uncomfortably.
Among the No Peak councilmen, Mrs. Nur sat open-mouthed. Mr. Loi was frowning. Mr. Vang and Mr. Koei were looking from Hilo to Shay to each other in stunned indecision of how to handle the situation. They had not been consulted on any of this.
"Call Jen," said Onde with admirable authority. "I must ask you to..."
Ait interrupted, her voice like steel. "The Mountain is the largest clan in the country. We have a reliable and adequate supply of jade, and we hold nearly half the votes on the board of the KJA. Why would we need to steal what we openly control?"
"What a good question."
Hilo tilted his head, scratching his jaw as if genuinely perplexed.
"Maybe you aren't stealing it for yourselves. Maybe you're finding some other use for that jade you don't want other green bones to know about."
Shadows darkened his face.
"Smuggling it on the black market through people like Tem Ben the Carver. Putting it in the hands of water-blooded crooks like your informer, Moot Jindunan, who runs crime rings in No Peak territory with the mountain's blessing. And with jade."
The word came out as a snarl. Hilo rose slowly from his seat.
"How many untrained, jade-fevered, shine-addicted gangsters are running around in this city, spying, thieving, wreaking havoc in the territory of other clans on the mountain's orders, in exchange for jade they have no right to wear? How big are the mountain's ranks when you include them in the count?"
Ait's body remained motionless, but her head drew up in slow malevolence, neck lengthening like a rearing viper. Her aura burned with murderous intent. When she spoke, it was entirely without the practiced professionalism she'd shown earlier. It was like a sharp blade being drawn delicately across flesh.
"How do you come up with such elaborate stories, Call Hilo Shudon?"
Hilo reached for his breast pocket. Everyone flinched, except for Ait, who made no move as Hilo pulled out a black cassette tape.
"The Stone Eye Tem Ben told it to me. He and Moot are feeding worms at the bottom of the harbor now."
He tossed the tape on the table. It skidded to the center and lay there like an explosive device no one would touch. Hilo leaned his hands on the table and spoke in a whisper.
"I found two of the weeds you planted in my yard, thief, and I'm gonna find the others. The next time we meet, it won't be in this room, and there won't be any mediation."
Hilo turned and walked out the door. For a second, Shay remained seated, then he heard her stand up and follow him silently out. Neither of them spoke. The phone call came 2 days later.
"Ait Chen wishes to meet with you alone," said Ri Tura from the other end of the line. "Somewhere neutral and private."
"What assurances do I have?" Shay asked.
Ri's slightly nasal voice lowered as if he were leaning forward.
"I'm speaking as one weatherman to another, Call Jen. We aren't thugs. Choose the time and place."
After a moment of thought, Shay said, "The Temple of Divine Return. In the back of the sanctum, tomorrow night." She hung up.
Chapter 47. Heaven is listening.
Shay arrived early at the temple the next evening. She walked silently into the sanctum and knelt on a cushion in the back corner. The deist house of worship held a different quality for her now than it had when she'd come here a few months ago. Jade made it different. That other time felt like a distant, half-waking dream for so many reasons. Now it was clear to her
that what felt like stillness and silence to the ordinary person was in reality a constant crooning musical hum of energy, filling the sanctum, radiating into the marrow of one's bones. The six cross-legged penitents, in perfect stillness, radiated powerful auras that filled her perception as completely as if she were staring into a floodlight that blotted out the center of her vision, leaving only the dim periphery untouched. As blinding as they were, the auras of the penitents were calm, as if they were harmonized in the same deep, dream-filled sleep, their breathing as gentle as the wind rustling the prayer cards and the leaves of the devotional trees in the courtyard. The last time Shay had knelt in doubt and indecision and prayed in the temple, she had not truly believed that she would be unequivocally answered by forces beyond her control. Bathed in the energetic resonance surrounding her now, Shay shivered inwardly, for she no longer doubted that this was a holy place, a place where the gods might be paying attention. That did not mean it was a kind place. Indeed, it was more dangerous than any other. Anything said or even contemplated in here would be heard by the penitents, might reach the ears of heaven. Shay touched her head to the ground 3 times. She whispered, "Yato, Father of all, I beg you to recognize my brother, Kal Lanshinwan, gone from this earth to await the return. He was a follower of Genshu, whom we call Old Uncle, and though he might not have come to this temple much, he had humility, compassion, courage, and goodness. More of the divine virtues than any greenbone I know." Shay closed her eyes and fell silent. She would have said more. She would have pleaded consideration for her grandfather, and for Hilo, and even for Doru, but she couldn't afford the time for contemplation and mourning. Not tonight. She was here to learn what information she could from a deadly enemy. She needed to be clear in mind and prepared in body. Ait Mada's entrance into the sanctum interposed on the edges of Shay's perception like a spear of red heat, parting the slow energetic thrum of the temple, a harsh chord sounding over a low melody. Shay waited, focusing her own composure, not betraying her unease. Ait did not pause or look around the sanctum. She went straight to Shay and knelt on the cushion beside her. Ait did not look at the other woman, nor did she touch her head to the ground, as was religious custom.
"You should know," she said, "that I did not order the death of Kal Lan."
Everything about Ait Mada, her speech, her movements, and her aura, bespoke directness and control. During the time Shay had been in her presence in Wisdom Hall, she'd gathered that beyond jade ability and training, it was constant unsentimental decisiveness that enabled Ait to overcome all the male rivals in her clan. Even her pauses always seemed deliberate, never a symptom of hesitation or uncertainty. She let one of them rest between herself and Shay before speaking again. "I had no reason to want your eldest brother dead. He was a reasonable man, overshadowed by his grandfather, perhaps, but nevertheless an intelligent and respected leader. Sooner or later, he would come to the proper conclusion. I was confident of that. We would have negotiated an agreement between our clans and avoided all this unpleasantness." Shay found it hard to speak from fury that made her vision waver.
"My brother lies cold in the ground. You expect me to believe you didn't put him there? Any greenbone in the mountain would have been proud to win Kal Lan's jade. No one has claimed that accomplishment. Doesn't that strike you as odd? The taxi driver that picked him up from the Lilac Divine said they were followed by men in a black car. Someone knew his habits and was waiting for him that night. Several people on the street heard gunfire down by the pier, and there were countless bullet holes near the place his body was found. 2 unregistered, damaged Fullerton machine guns were found on the dock. Hardly the sort of weapon carried by common criminals in No-Peak territory. The men who killed him were working for the Mountain. You lie if you deny it.
She was grateful and mildly amazed that she was able to state all of this with the matter-of-fact self-possession of a true weatherman.
The Pillar is the master of the clan, the spine of the body, without which nothing moves. Unless you mean to convince me that those men were acting against your orders, how can you sit here and say you didn't kill him?
You're correct, Kaljen,
Ait said, surprising Shay with formal address.
I'm responsible for his death, but I didn't whisper his name. I wanted to send a message deep into No Peak to impress upon Kaul Lanshinwan the realization that going to war with the Mountain would be unwise and ultimately futile. In doing so, I hoped to avoid the war, or at least shorten it. Things didn't go as I intended.
Because it was Hilo you always meant to kill.
Yes.
For a second, Shay allowed herself to contemplate with morbid curiosity the idea of an entirely different unfolding of tragedy. Had the initial assassination attempt succeeded, Hilo's death would have been a terrible blow to Lan, but Ait was not unreasonable in suspecting that the Pillar's sense of pragmatism and responsibility would have ultimately won out over the desire for vengeance. Without a strong horn to rely on, Lan most likely would have acceded to terms of peace, rather than risk the entire clan in a disadvantaged war. Shay brought her attention back to the moment at hand. Possibilities that lay in the past were illusions, closed doors, as meaningless as unfulfilled intentions.
You asked to meet with me, she reminded Ait. It wasn't merely to try and convince me that you had only wanted to kill one of my brothers instead of both.
Ait said sharply,
This war is pointless and destructive to both our clans. The audit of the KJA was childish and unnecessary. It invited the Royal Council and the press to come snooping into Greenbone matters. Is that something we really need when we can solve these issues quietly between us? The politicians have gotten it into their heads to try and pass some bureaucratic legislation or form some oversight body. For what ultimate benefit? We may even attract international attention, and the last thing the country needs is more self-serving foreigners meddling in our affairs.
You brought it on yourself, Shay replied.
The Mountain has been blatantly breaking the rules of the Kaycon Jade Alliance. Doru has been covering for you.
Doru is a far-sighted man, loyal to Kaul Sen and the ideals he stood for, Ait said. He realized that neither of the Torch's grandsons could replace him, and that an alliance was inevitable.
She turned to Shay with eyes that held the coldness that came from absence of doubt.
It is exactly that, Kaljen. Inevitable.
An alliance? Shay said. Why not just call it what it is? Destroying your enemies. Complete power in the city and monopolistic control of the country's jade.
Ait studied her with such cool consideration that Shay felt in that moment a flutter of fear like a moth in her ribcage. Ait was not much larger than her physically, but that meant next to nothing when it came to a contest of jade ability. This was a woman who killed before her father's funeral and did not bow in a temple of the gods. Perhaps she would even strike in the presence of a penitent. If she wanted to kill Shay now, there was nothing to stop her. Shay forced a calming awareness into her body, deliberately noting the relaxed state of each muscle and joint. Ait was so close, she would perceive fear with no effort, no matter how composed Shay's face. At last, Ait spoke, as if she were lecturing a stubborn student.
You're an educated and traveled woman, not like those who've never left the country. Consider what's happening outside Kaycon.
tension between Aspenia and Igutan grows day by day. The world is dividing into camps, and both sides covet the jade found only on this island. What kind of fortune did the Aspenians spend to create SN1 so they could equip their elite soldiers with jade? The Igutanians are playing catch-up, but they certainly want no less. I'm told they've been researching how to make their soldiers more naturally resistant, more like us. The Shatarians did the same thing years ago, brought Kekanese and Aboke women to secret facilities to be raped and impregnated in an attempt to create a Shatarian army with natural jade resistance. We're a small country with a precious resource. If we don't take the right actions, we'll find ourselves at the mercy of imperial powers again. The only way for us to resist the foreigners in the long run is to be united as one clan again.
United by conquest, you mean? First you had to weaken No Peak. You might have tried to negotiate an upfront alliance with Lan, but instead you colluded with Doru and supplied jade and tip-offs to gangsters within our territories.
Ite was unmoved by Shay's anger.
It's as you say. The pillar is the master of the clan, the spine of the body. There can only be one spine. Kaal Lan was a proud man. He wouldn't have willingly relinquished control of his clan, certainly not while he had the strength of his horn behind him. And Gaunt Ash and Kaal Hilo couldn't be in one clan any more than two cocks could share a henhouse. We had to establish supremacy in the streets before an honest and productive conversation could begin.
Where's the additional jade you've been taking from the mines?
Ite astonished Shay by answering at once.
We're selling it to the Igutanians.
The contract is entirely secret, of course, because of Kaycon's public alliance with Aspenia. But we know the Igutanians are already acquiring jade through the black market. No matter what we do, how strictly we crack down, smuggling remains a problem. The potential profit for smugglers is so high, they cannot be dissuaded, even with death penalties. If we offer the Igutanians a reliable supply, we'll destroy the underground trade. There will be less crime on Kaycon, and far more profit to the clan. We'll be supplier to both sides of the mounting conflict. We'll ensure our security and protect our income, no matter which foreigners prevail. That's why you're also starting to produce shine.
Shay could not help but admire the simplicity of it now.
You can't sell that quantity of jade to the Igutanians without also promising them the shine to go with it.
Factories on the mainland, manufacturing SN1 quickly and cheaply. Not the sort of stuff we'd ever want here on the island, but good enough for the foreigners. The Igutanians do not know the difference, and they have so many people, they treat them as expendable anyway.
How much money was the mountain already bringing in from its secret contracts, Shay wondered. Siphoning jade from the national coffers, selling it to foreigners, trafficking in shine. It must be millions of dien, hundreds of millions. Ite's voice took on an edge of excitement. Shay sensed in the heavy texture of her aura a driven and deadly tenaciousness, like that of some purebred hunting animal that once set to quarry, would rather run until it falls dead than give up the chase. She angled to face Shay directly now and said,
"If we introduce a reliable supply of cheap SN1 into the market, sales of jade go up and we profit. If we shut off the spigot, foreign governments will have to contend with jaded people going mad, unable to control their powers, dying of the itches. With that kind of market power, we Greenbones will retain rightful control over jade and will have the wealth and means to protect the country, as we've always done."
Shay was silent for a moment before answering.
"It really is, Ite Chen, a visionary and cunning strategy.
She meant it. Ait was truly a higher-level pillar, not satisfied with merely continuing her father's legacy, but intent on altering the path of the clan and the country as a whole. A formidable successor to the Spear of Kaycon. Under Ait's leadership, the Mountain Clan would build an international empire of jade and drugs. It would eliminate or subsume its rivals until one clan ruled Kaycon. The country would foment global tensions and profit by spreading the availability of jade and shine to millions of people beyond its borders, with Greenbones sitting at the apex of a burgeoning jade pyramid they controlled.
"I share with you all my plans in complete honesty," Ait said, "because I can see you're an intelligent and ambitious woman. There are few enough of us in the world of Greenbones, the world of men. I know that you were top graduate at the academy and the favorite of Carl Sennington, and yet you were obscured by your brothers. You discovered the clan was an insular, constricting place. That's how you came to work for the Aspenian military, and afterward, why you left Kaycon." Heat climbed up Shay's chest and neck at Ait's presumptuous but essentially accurate description. How had Ait learned these things? She was indignant, yet strangely flattered that the Pillar of the Mountain had thought to dig into her past in an attempt to find the right leverage to use on her. "I see some of my younger self in you, Carl Shaygen. If I had known you would return to Kaycon and wear jade again, I'd have approached you much earlier. Let the two of us resolve this feud. Your brother is a dangerous, foolish man-child, driven by pride and bloodlust. He would fight to the last man on principle alone. It's what he knows how to do." Shay knew what was coming next.
"Usurp him. End this senseless war. Retura is near retirement, and I tire of him regardless. I would make you my weatherman. Weatherman of a great clan. Weatherman of Kaycon itself."
"You overestimate me, Ait-Jen," Shay said, hearing something pitted and sour scrape in her voice. "I've been gone from Kaycon for years, and am still an outsider in my own clan. The Luckbringers and Lantern Men accept me grudgingly. All the fists and fingers of No Peak are loyal to my brother. There's no reason for them not to remain so. We can arrange things simply between us. Make it appear honorable. Carl Hilo can fall in battle as the war hero he clearly wishes to be. There'd be no taint of treachery for you, no worry of vengeance from his followers. Afterward, you'd be acting with full legitimacy."
Shay nodded. "An ambush, then. Getting Hilo alone at a place and time of their choosing. This time, the Mountain would see to it that the assassination plan was better, foolproof." How easily Ait spoke of all this, as if the necessary fratricide was no less difficult to arrange than any other business transaction. Truly, she doesn't fear the judgment of either men or gods. Shay's stir of unbidden admiration tasted acidic in her throat. Ait was a stronger woman than she. Shay glanced in the direction of the penitents, who still sat unmoving, their auras unperturbed by the content of the conversation they might be exposing to heaven itself.
"Is anyone listening?"
Perhaps, Shay thought with sudden heaviness, the penitents meditated in vain. Jade-enhanced senses and the power of perception endowed Greenbones with so much more nuance and clarity about the world around them. But it didn't, in the end, offer up any great truth, any proof of the gods, or hope that the people could ever be anything more than what they were. Was old Uncle Genshu paying attention now? Did he grieve what had become of the legacy of honorable warriors? The return couldn't be further away than Greenbones plotting murder in the sanctum of the temple.
Ait had seen clearly Shae's ambition and resentment, had seized upon her rivalry with Hilo as an opening. Shae understood what that said about her. If the way to redemption was through the divine virtues, she was no closer to heaven than the woman next to her. She turned to Ait now.
"You say you see your younger self in me," she said. "I see in you the kind of greenbone I don't want to become. Jade meant something once. I'm not an oathbreaker. I won't betray the memory of a slain brother and sell the life of another for power." She stood up, wondering as she did so if she just sealed her own death. "I want no part of the Kaycon you envision."
Ait remained sitting for a few seconds. Then she rose to her feet and faced the younger woman. Her expression was unchanged, but her aura swelled with unmistakably ominous intent, and despite herself, Shae took an involuntary step back.
"I despise it when my hand is forced," the pillar said, adjusting one of the coils of jade on her arm. "Ait Ugandan brought me, a girl that should have died, out of a war orphanage, and trained me to be the strongest greenbone in the Mountain Clan. Yet when he grew old, he couldn't bring himself to name me his heir. He feared a backlash from the inner circle of men in the clan who would fault him for naming a woman his successor. The Spear of Kaycon, who was never afraid to die fighting the Shatarians, he was afraid to name an adopted daughter to rule his precious clan. The man I call my father, the one to whom I owe everything, he forced my hand. Before his body was cold, I had to kill his closest comrades, greenbones I valued and respected for the position that should have been mine without question. With his dying breath, my father could have prevented bloodshed, but he didn't. Such is the cowardice and short-sightedness of even the most well-meaning of men."
The expression of disappointment on Ait's face held a frightening calm as she said to Shae,
"I've offered you an opportunity that you've spurned. Don't worry, you naive and idealistic girl. I won't kill you now. I want you to remember when you see your brother's jade torn from his mangled body, when your clan lies in ashes, that you could have prevented it, but didn't. You forced my hand. You'll remember."
Ait turned and swept from the sanctum, the wake of her passing stirring the holy room like a hot wind carrying the promise of drought and punishing devastation. Then she was gone, and the temple was once again harmonious. The penitents sitting in the circle had not stirred. Alone now, the strain broke through Shae's control. Her heart began racing, and sweat beaded on her face. She sank back down onto the cushion.
"Heaven help us. My clan, all greenbones, all of Kaycon."
Chapter 48. Reading the Clouds. Hilo was furious at his sister. He stormed into the main call house and found her at the table in Lan's study with Woon. Unlike him, she seemed to enjoy retreating in here, though he'd never seen her sit in Lan's chair. He would have forbidden her from using the room if she'd done that. Both Shae and Woon were waiting for him silently when he barged through the doors. It would have been hard not to perceive his approach. He swept an arm across the table, scattering papers everywhere, involuntarily deflecting Lan's empty chair into the back wall and books off the bookshelves. Hilo placed both hands on the table and leaned over his weatherman.
"Doru escaped," he said.
Shae paled, understanding the disastrous import at once. The traitor would flee straight to the mountain, taking with him everything there was to know about No Peak's business secrets, not to mention knowledge of the Call estate and its defenses.
"You made me keep him alive. You convinced me he wouldn't be a threat. I shouldn't have listened to you.
I should have killed that snake!
Hilo's face was flushed, his eyes bulging. His hands clenched and unclenched, as if desperate to wrap themselves around Doru's absent throat. Woon pushed his chair back from the pillar nervously, but Shay merely